Are there any persons here today that were not here yesterday and the day before? All right. So I'll give you a little review. But please appreciate it's going to be very little. Because we spent maybe 4 hours together or 6 hours together, it was. So it's going to be very compact. The first day we spent discussing Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, the author of the book that we're having discussion about. In fact, I'll ask another two more questions. Is there anybody here that doesn't know who is Krishna?
在这里，在此之前呢，我想问两个问题，在座的有谁不知道Krishna是谁？
Everyone knows who is Krishna.
就是知道 Krishna.
Okay. They don't know. Those who do not know. Anyone that doesn't know who is Krishna.
不知道Krishna的是谁的举手。
Uh-huh. Okay. And now, how many of you do not know who is Lord Chaitanya? Okay. Okay. Thank you. So this is especially for you too. I'm going to give a little explanation who is Krishna. A little one. Krishna is the source of everything.
Krishna is the source of everything.
Everything material, everything spiritual comes from one source, and that one source is a supreme person. So Krishna is the source of everything. And from time to time, Krishna sends representatives from the spiritual realm to come here. Sometimes he comes himself. And 5,000 years ago, Krishna came himself. And he taught Bhagavad Gita. And we all study Bhagavad Gita. Another manifestation of Krishna appeared in this world named Lord Buddha. Maybe that's a surprise to some of you. But these very ancient writings from India, 5,000 years old, they predicted Buddha would come. Down to the detail of his mother's name and where he would appear. And what his teachings would be. A little biography of his life before he even appeared. And then 1,000 years or so after that, Lord Chaitanya appeared. Here's a painting of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya taught how to become pure lover of Krishna. One of the principal means of awakening our love for Krishna that's within the heart of every living being is the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Lord Chaitanya taught that. So that's who is Lord Chaitanya. And then there were followers of Lord Chaitanya who took his teachings and taught them to others, the next generation, who taught them to the next generation. So, the first day I was discussing the life of one of those great teachers. And as you see across the top, his name was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He lived during the period of time from around 1630 to 1710. He lived for approximately 90 years. During his lifetime, he was a fantastic spiritual personality. Among his many contributions, he wrote commentaries on writings of Lord Chaitanya's followers. Because Lord Chaitanya didn't write books. He taught others and told them, you please write the books. And so they did. And one of the chief personalities amongst the followers of Lord Chaitanya were Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. As you can see by their garments, their dress, they lived very, very simply. Their entire set of clothing in their closet was one cloth. Pretty simple. But in that simplicity, as you can see, they wrote many, many books. And they studied scriptures. And they took the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and made them available for the future generations. And they were very, very deep and profound. Several hundred years later, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur studied those teachings. And he explained them in very simple language. And we're discussing during this holiday time one of those books. And here it is, it's really skinny. But it's very heavy. You'll see as I continue. Surabhi was complaining it's very difficult to translate because it's so deep and so profound. So that was the first day. And the second day we discussed the subject matter of the book. The title Madhurya Kandambini means the cloud bank of nectar.
那么这本书的名字叫 Maduyakadambini, 指的是甘露之云。
Instead of clouds in the sky made of water,
那么实际上这本这这一刻这一个云团它不是用水做
The clouds that were raised by Lord Chaitanya were clouds of nectar.
那么实际上这个云朵是注入了 Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu 的这个生平
And each of the chapters were a downpour, a shower of that nectar from those clouds. There were three subjects in this first chapter. Can anybody remember? I know it was a long time ago.
Yesterday.
It's a long time to retain memory of something. What was the first thing?
Krishna is independent.
Yes. Second thing.
And bhakti is also independent.
Because bhakti is based upon the mercy of Radharani. And the third thing is, what causes bhakti to appear in someone's heart? And the answer was,
bhakti
causes bhakti.
So that's
And that's the topics we discussed yesterday.
这就是我们昨天所讨论的话题。
Sounds really simple, right?
听起来是很容易的，是不是？
We spent 2 hours talking about that.
但是我们却花了两个时间来讲。
Well, wait till you hear today's message.
所以我们今天还要今天讲述的讯息。
So here comes chapter 2.
这个今天要讲的是第二章的内容。
Okay, soon. There we go. Okay.We ended chapter 1 indicating the 9 stages of bhakti. So now I'm going to tell you, in summary, the subject matter of chapter 2. There's 4 parts. Those of you that like to take notes,get your notebook out. The first subject matter that's presented by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is defining what bhakti is. Definition.
那么在这里呢，第一点是 Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur 首先提出来的第一写的第一点就是给 bhakti 下了定义。什么是 bhakti?
Very simple.
非常简单。
It's the essential utterance of the entire nectar devotion.
那么它实际上是整个奉爱恩露的实质。
That's the first subject.
这是第五个，这是第三个主题。
What is bhakti?
什么是 bhakti?
Second subject.
第二个主题是。
He explains that.Now that bhakti has begun, what are the different stages of bhakti? And there's 3.
那么在这里面说了，既然 bhakti 奉爱已经开始了，那么这个阶段已分哪几个阶段？
Those of you that have studied nectar of devotion,
那些学习过奉爱的甘露的人，
here's what it looks like.
这就是奉爱的甘露这本书。
There's 3 basic parts.To nectar of devotion.
那么在奉爱的甘露里面有三个基本的部分。
Devotional service and practice.
那就是练习当中的修行当中的奉爱服务。
Devotional service and spontaneity or spontaneous love.
然后第二个部分讲的是自发的奉爱服务。
That's called bhava bhakti.
这被称为 bhava bhakti.
And devotional service and love of Krishna or prema bhakti.
那么在纯粹之爱之中的对 Krishna 的奉爱服务被称为 Prema Bhakti
So the second part of this chapter 2 is simple definition of sadhana bhakti, the first stage. The third subject matter. When devotional service or sadhana bhakti begins, it accomplishes two very wonderful things very quickly. And those two things are, it destroys the sufferings of material existence very quickly. And it awakens the virtue of all auspiciousness in one's life. Okay. You got it? Those of you that know Nectar Devotion, think of Chapter 1, Nectar Devotion. The title of that chapter is Characteristics of Pure Devotional Service. The first two of those six characteristics of pure devotional service correspond with sadhana bhakti. In a very short, very simple way, Vishwanath is summarizing that. And the fourth topic of chapter 2 is he then discusses these three stages, faith, sadhu sangha, and bhajana kriya, these three here. You may need to sit over here and use this little. Is it long enough? Is it long enough?
Yes.
Okay, go for it. You ready? You remember what to say now? Because I spoke, did you translate it? Okay, so those are our four sections. You ready? Here we go. Chapter 2. The second shower of nectar. Here's how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur begins. So he says that sadhana bhakti is the beginning stage of bhakti. And before, let's do this. Sadhana bhakti, before explaining sadhana bhakti, he explains what is bhakti. Those of you that are more experienced in Krishna consciousness, let's recite the verse together in Sanskrit. Anya vilashita shunyam jnana karma janavratam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhakti ruttama.
Anya
Anyone know the verse?
You know the verse.
We didn't just do it together.
没有人跟着一起念啊。
Those who know the verse, please say it with me.
那些知道这个世界的人，请跟妈妈阿姨一起来吟诵这首诗节。Anyabilashatashunyam
jnana karma janavritam anukulyena krishnano shilanam bhaktir uttama. So that one verse is the foundation of the entire nectar devotion. So here's the meaning. There's two parts to it. First part is what devotional service isn't, and then what devotional service is. He's defining the subject matter of nectar of devotion. So the subject matter of nectar of devotion is devotion. Or bhakti. So what is bhakti? Well, here's what it isn't. First, here's what it isn't. It has nothing to do with karma, fruitive activity. Yesterday we discussed the meaning of karma, remember? And the second is, it's devoid of or absent speculative knowledge, jnana. Devotion is pure. Free from karma and
jnana.
So that's what bhakti isn't. So what is it? It's the cultivation of those activities that are pleasing to Krishna. Following the teachings of Rupa Goswami and Lord Chaitanya. So that's stated at the very beginning of this chapter 2. He describes bhakti as a wish-fulfilling creeper. Wish-fulfilling. It fulfills one's desires. When those desires are free from material, acquiring material things for enjoyment, and without interest in speculative knowledge at all. He speaks of a strong vow or dridhavrata. To achieve just one thing. Devotion, unmixed devotion to Krishna. He likens that vow to that of a bee. Bees only want honey. Bees go to flowers to gather pollen so they can make honey. So a practitioner of bhakti is like a bee. They have an attitude in life that whatever is pleasing to Krishna, they want to accept that.
That
And if something is not pleasing to Krishna, they just don't have any interest in it. And he ends by saying that bhakti is magical, mystical. The heart of someone who is involved in material life, the heart of someone involved in material life is hard like iron. And bhakti makes their heart like gold instead of iron. And the senses of those who are materialistic are like serpents. When one becomes filled with bhakti, the fangs of the serpent are broken, and instead a golden-like spiritual quality, even of the senses, is manifest. So that's what bhakti is. And one has received it from the association of a nice devotee. And it begins in the heart like a seed. So this sadhana bhakti or devotional practice is a way of awakening or sprouting the seed. So this explains what I just described to you. No. So here's the seed, and now it's starting to sprout, and the first thing that comes up is two leaves that unfurl like this. Maybe some of you have grown tulsi plants or some other kind of cultivation and gardening. The seed goes in the ground. You cover up the seed with soil. Add a little bit of water. The covering of the seed starts to soften. And a little shoot comes out. And then two leaves start to unfurl as the shoot grows. And here's the first leaf. The first leaf is called kleshagni. Those of you that are familiar with Bhagavad Gita, you're familiar with this word klesha. There are types of suffering called kleshas. In Sanskrit, it's adhyatmika klesha, adhibhautika klesha, adhidaivika klesha, or different causes of suffering for the living entity. It's part of material existence. But bhakti is very wonderful. Even in the very beginning stage, the miseries and the causes of the miseries are destroyed. And that's the meaning here. And you didn't fix the font. It's,
I need it.
Huh?
I need it.
You forgot?
No, I did not forget. I mean, I missed it.
Oh.
This way. It has changed. This way.
Okay, what's the font?
Okay,
there's sadhana.
Yeah.
But this... You have to do it letter by letter?
Yes. It has to do it letter by letter. Oof. I don't know what happened.
Okay. Here's the second leaf.
This is your opinion.
It's called Shubha Da. What is the name of mother of the mother of Lord Krishna? Yashoda. Yashoda. The meaning of her name is she da. She gives yasha or fame. Anyone that associates with Yashoda receives fame from Yashoda. She's the giver of fame. And this is Shubha Da. Shubha means auspicious. You'll find in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita a verse. Shubha Ashubha Palayar Eva Mokshase Karma Bandhanai. Verse says that devotional service transcends auspicious and inauspicious circumstances. So this second leaf of the creeper of bhakti gives one auspiciousness. Supposing someone comes from a very unfortunate background. But they take up devotional service. So you know what happens? Just from devotional service, their life becomes filled with auspiciousness. Now there are different kinds of auspiciousness. Here's a teaching of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Take notes, O note takers. There's three kinds. And this is speaking of the third kind. There's material auspiciousness. Like if you do some pious activity, if you plant trees by the side of the road, or you dig wells, or you do some philanthropy to help other people, this creates material auspiciousness. You get good results. The results are wealth and material prosperity. Like in China, many people are becoming very prosperous. Know for certain that behind that prosperity is some piety. But what happens if one does impious activity? That prosperity will diminish. In this way, civilizations come and they fall because of impiety. Civilizations may rise and then fall because or an individual may become prosperous and then they lose everything. Behind the prosperity is shubha or auspiciousness. shubha.
Shubha.
Now there's a second kind.
那么这是第二种.
The second kind is that which gives liberation.
那么第二种吉祥就是给予解脱.
The first one gives material prosperity, the second one gives liberation.
那么第一种吉祥是给予物质上的富有或者是繁荣，第二种吉祥是给予解脱.
Examples of that are?
那么其中给予解脱的例子是?
Study of the Vedanta Sutra, the philosophical portion of the Vedas.
例如研习维丹特苏者，那么就是来听的哲学部分.
It gives moksha as a or liberation as a fruit of that auspiciousness.
那么它就会给予这种吉祥的成果，就是赐予解脱.
But this is speaking of a third kind.
但是呢，在这里提到的苏达是第三种吉祥.
And that's spiritual well-being.
那这是灵性上的福祉.
Devotion to Krishna.
是被Krishna的奉爱.
Ultimately, entrance into the spiritual association of Krishna.
那么会最终的使人进入到灵性世界，与Krishna同伴.
Bhakti grants that, even in the sadhana stage.
那么今天是在sadhana这个阶段履行的奉献服务.
This is the teaching of Rupa Goswami.
这是Rupa Goswami教导.
And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is explaining it in simple language. And you'll find this described in Chapter 1 of Nectar of Devotion. It's the first two characteristics of devotional, pure devotional service. So, I'll say it now for a third time, just so it's very clear. Even from the very beginning of the type of devotional service taught by Rupa Goswami, one is on the path of pure devotional service. I'll say the same thing in a different way. Right here is a Tulsi seed that hasn't been sprouted yet. Over here is a little Tulsi shoot just coming, popping through the surface of the soil. And over here is a Tulsi plant that's starting to grow and has many leaves. And way over here is a Tulsi that has manjaris and is producing new seeds. So now I have a question for you. Which one of these is a Tulsi?
Which one?
Which one is Tulsi?
那么是哪一种是Tulsi?
Only the one that has the flowers, the manjaris, and new seeds?
是那个已经长出了mandarin花的才是Tulsi吗?
The answer is all, each one of them.
那么答案是这四个都是Tulsi.
Yesterday we talked about getting the seed. And today we're talking about the little first shoot that comes out with two little leaves. That's bhakti. The seed is bhakti, and the first little appearance of the two leaves is also bhakti. That's the topic of Nectar Devotion. And this is a little summary of that first chapter. We're practicing this, sadhana bhakti. And if we practice it properly, it counts as pure devotional service, not yet mature. It counts. It's considered part of pure devotional service just at the beginning stages, not yet mature. So it's very important, like the Sringa Maharaj was discussing yesterday morning, that we follow the practices of sadhana bhakti very carefully. Now here's another detail. When you closely examine a leaf, you'll find the upper surface is smooth and the lower surface is rough. Correct? Shouldn't it, right? So, Vishwanath says the upper surface is one type of devotional service. It's Raga Nuga Bhakti.
And
the lower surface is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Yesterday there was a discussion about this. Those of you that were with us yesterday, can you remember that discussion? I don't see the Mataji. She was sitting right over here before yesterday. She was asking about Raga Nuga Bhakti. I'm sharing with you that that's taught in Nectar Devotion. It's presented here also. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one can progress in a very natural way to the second kind. We're performing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Vaidhi comes from the Sanskrit word vidhi, which means rule. We're supposed to follow rules. Rise early in the morning. Take your morning bath. Come and see the deity. Chant your rounds very carefully. Offer that which you are going to eat first, you make the offering to Krishna. Nectar devotion has many of such regulations. And one who follows those rules or vidhis is practicing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Of those vidhis or rules, there are five that are most important. This is a Nectar Devotion message. Here they are. First one, reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Come to the morning program. We read Srimad Bhagavatam every morning. What else do we do? We chant the holy name of Krishna. And this is the second one of the essential, most powerful regulations of bhakti. Here's the next one. We worship the deity form of Krishna. That's number three. And then number four, we visit, if not reside in, the holy land of Vrindavan. And what's the last one? Vaishnava Seva. We render devotional service to a devotee of the Lord. So these five are the most important regulations in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Here's what Rupa Goswami says. Any one of them, if performed without offense, it's so powerful that at once love of God can awaken in one's heart. Powerful. Here's something Prabhupada told one of his disciples very early in the Hare Krishna movement. Every day when we chant our 16 rounds, we have 25,000 chances for perfection. Do the math. Every mantra has how many names? Times 108 times 16 comes to 25,000. So Prabhupada told this disciple, every day you have, if you can just chant one name of Krishna without offense, just one name of Krishna without offense, your life is perfect. Krishna prema will awaken. Very powerful. So, as Nrsimha Maharaj was saying, we should very carefully follow the vidhis of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. So that's one of the two surfaces of the leaves, the bottom surface. Remember, there's an upper surface and a lower surface of each leaf. Now he's going to describe the upper surface of the surface of raga. Whoops, you missed some translation. Whoever did, anyway, it's, translation part is missing. And raga, he says, this means the thirst or desire for things in relation to Krishna. Who knows the word in Sanskrit for thirst? Thirst. In Sanskrit. In Sanskrit. Krishna. Not Krishna, but Trishna. Asat Trishna means thirst for the impermanent. So we're supposed to get thirst for Krishna. That's Krishna, Trishna.
Krishna, Trishna.
And that's spontaneous love for Krishna. And there's a sadhana for achieving that.
And there's a sadhana for achieving that.
very briefly, we discussed this yesterday with this Mataji and her question. But it's part of bhakti, it's a sadhana part of bhakti. Again, we practice Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Now let's go back to the first of the two leaves. Who can remember 10 minutes ago? What was the first of the two leaves? Yay, very good.
To bring the all auspicious.
No, that's the second one.
Just
the first one. We're going to focus on the first one. Very good. So now we're going to discuss that in some detail. This is the anatomy of a leaf. It's called botany. I don't know what you have in Chinese. Botany. What's the word, Rajendra? The study of plants.
Okay.
We're going to have a little botany class. A spiritual plant. The creeper of bhakti makes one leaf, and we're going to look at that leaf very carefully. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in our nice little book here, he says that the sufferings or miseries and even the causes of those miseries are relieved just by doing your sadhana nicely. So if you listen to this very carefully, and next time you go to Nrisimha Maharaj and say, "Oh Maharaj, I'm suffering something. He'll say, "Are you chanting your rounds nicely?" Because those five types of sufferings or misery, and even the causes of the misery, will be mitigated if you chant Hare Krishna nicely. Okay, so now listen carefully. These are five different types of miseries or their causes. The first one of the five is avidya, or ignorance. Vidya means knowledge, and its opposite is ignorance. In general, it means having our true identity covered. Here's some examples. That which is impermanent is accepted to be permanent. That which is a source of misery is accepted as pleasurable. That which is a source of misery is accepted as pleasurable or blissful. Like smoking a cigarette or drinking alcohol. and other forms of so-called sense pleasure. They're actually sources of misery. Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, persons who are in material life looking for happiness through sense pleasure, the very expectation of happiness from sense pleasure is the birthplace of misery. We could give many examples. But Maharaj is expert at it, so I'll let him do it in his next Bhagavatam class. One accepts that which is impure to be pure. One accepts that which is not the self to be the self. This is the nature of avidya. So sadhana bhakti, just on its own, has a very wonderful effect that it removes this tendency for avidya. Okay, now you're ready for the next one. It's a companion of the first one. They're good friends. Asmita.
Asmita.
False ego. They're similar but different. Asmita means I don't know who I am. Excuse me, avidya means I don't know who I am. And asmita is that who, the wrong identity, I accept that one. Basically, it's bodily identification. One is forgetting that I'm a spirit soul, and the other is accepting the body as the self. But it doesn't stop there. Proprietorship comes next. What is produced of this body is mine. And there's another part to this, dear Asmita. I only accept that which I can directly perceive as real. Here's something Maharaj, I think, will especially appreciate. Do any of you in the room, have any of you in this room heard of this nice name of Richard Dawkins?
Richard Dawkins.
Anyone familiar with that name? You familiar, Maharaj? He's a British scientist who is a hardcore atheist. A British scientist. And he travels around teaching atheism. He wrote a book. The most recent of his many books. It's called, the title is God Deception.
Deception.
Cheating. And his thing is, show me the proof. Where's the proof? Asmita.
Asmita.
Only that which one can detect with the senses is real. Only that which can be detected or perceived through the senses is real. Fortunately, devotees become freed from that covering and suffering of material existence. And now comes number three. And actually I'll cover number three and number four together. Because they're also good friends. Raga and Dvesha. Raga means attachment to get some material happiness. And decrease my suffering by doing that. There are two nice verses in Bhagavad Gita where this very message is taught by Krishna. Chapter 2, text number, whatever it is, 64?
Yes.
Yeah. Please read the Sanskrit and the translation in Chinese. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. 264. I'll read the Sanskrit. You read the translation in Chinese. Here's the Sanskrit. Raga Devesha Vimuktaistu Vishayan Indriyaish Charan Atma Vashyayar Vidheyatma Prasadam Arigashati.
译文：一个人如果能够摆脱一切执着和厌恶，遵守对自由的规范限制、控制感官，就能够获得主的彻底恩赐。
Yeah, no, that's good. So, raga means attachment, and dvesha means aversion.
那么，对raga的意思是迷恋，而对dvesha的意思是厌恶。
I don't like unhappiness.
我不想,
I'll do anything to get free from this difficult situation.
我想我要尽不惜一切代价脱离这种非常痛苦艰难的处境.
Like yesterday was Ekadasi.
就像昨天是Ekadasi.
Right?
是不是?
Day before yesterday. Day before yesterday was Ekadasi.
前天是Ekadasi.
Okay? How many of you observe some kind of fasting on Ekadasi? We all observe fasting from beans and grains. How many observe some kind of fasting on Ekadasi? So, worldly people, they don't want to fast on any day. It's difficult. But devotees, they like to fast on Ekadasi. Why? Because Ekadasi is a very auspicious day. And we like to increase our hearing about Krishna on an auspicious day. And we like to diminish bodily demands and necessities in a realistic way on Ekadasi days. So, Vaishnavas, devotees, and Brahmanas, they like us. They like austerity. There's a saying that austerity is the wealth of a Brahmana.
But
But for someone who's involved in material existence, they have an aversion for any sense diminishing of my sense activity. It's not nice. Now let's go a little bit higher in this raga and devesha activity. We'll go to chapter 7 Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says that all living entities take birth in this material world. Because of this problem of raga and dvesha. Here's the verse. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sargayanti parantapa. Translation in Chinese. 7:27. Here's a living entity looking at the position of the supreme enjoyer. Thinking, I think it'd be nice if I could be the supreme enjoyer for at least a little while. Why is he always at the center? I want to be in the center. That's the raga. I want. But there's an obstacle or a problem. There's someone already sitting there. So I have to remove him. That's dvesha. Raga, dvesha, samutena dvandava mohena bharata. The living entity becomes captured in this duality of material existence because of having coveting or desiring the position of the supreme enjoyer, and then having some bad attitude towards he who is the supreme enjoyer. What to do? Take up devotional service, following proper regulations, and both of those tendencies will diminish. You may still struggle, but continue to cultivate and practice sadhana bhakti carefully. And those miseries and the causes of those miseries will be diminished. Now here's the final one. And the last word ran off the page. Abhinivesh means obsession with material objects or things. Abhinivesh means a kind of pervasive, I want to enjoy. Raga is more specific towards some particular thing. Like, I want money, money. We know some people like that. And then abhinivesh is more pervasive, just kind of a spirit of being an enjoyer. So this very nice teaching of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, if we do our sadhana bhakti very carefully, follow the regulations carefully, these sufferings and miseries will be mitigated. So you're with me so far? Because we're going to go up one more level. Here's the next level. We listed five types of sufferings or kleshas. I'm going to go on to this. This is out of order. That's what happened. Okay. These five, when they're active, they give rise to deciding doing right things or wrong things. Acting in a religious way or an irreligious way. Or engaging in sinful activity or piety. You got it. These five from the previous page, they give rise to religion or irreligion. Irreligion creates sin. And then there's a reaction for sin. There's the action and there's the reaction. We're very familiar with that. It's called karma. And sinful activity results in the seed of the next suffering. And that seed of the next suffering has different stages. Those of you that have read Nectar Devotion, you know all about this. And I'm a little reluctant to ask how many people have read Nectar Devotion. How many of you have read Nectar Devotion? Whoa, very good. Very good. Very good. This is a summary of one part of Nectar Devotion. There's a seed that's just like a dormant seed. Then there's a condition where the seed is just starting to germinate. And there's another stage where it's just about to pop through the surface of the soil like a seed. That's called aprarabdha, and then the final, those that we're experiencing now, this moment. That's called prarabdha karma. So I'm going to pause here for a moment. Supposing you have a garden. And you want to grow some vegetables. And next to the vegetables, there's some weeds. Supposing you just like clip off the top of the weed. What's going to happen? Very quickly, the reed there will continue to grow.
You
clip off the top of the weed. And again, it'll grow. So, you can't just clip off the top of the weed, you have to pull out the root. then it can't grow anymore. The example is clear, yes? Similarly, there are many religious processes that deal with prarabdha karma. Come on, it's right there, prarabdha.
Prarabdha karma.
Very good. In many religious processes, supposing someone is suffering from some wrong that they have done, and there's a process of atonement or mitigating that which I'm suffering from now. Those processes of atonement deal with prarabdha karma. Keep practicing, you'll get it. So then there's these other three that aren't touched at all. By the other, commonly, the other processes of atonement don't touch these other stages of sin at all. Commonly, I'll say it in little pieces. Commonly, other processes of religion which teach some process of atonement, they may relieve us from the present suffering, but they don't touch these other stages of sin at all. So, devotional service and practice, sadhana bhakti that we're all doing, it's very powerful. It helps eliminate all four of these categories of sufferings. Very nice, isn't it? One day, you'll all have read Srimad Bhagavatam.
And
when you get to Canto 6 Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find the first three chapters of Canto 6 Bhagavatam explain this in detail. I'm just giving it to you in summary. Srimad Bhagavatam is wonderful. This morning Maharaj was speaking about gulab jamuns. This is like 10 gulab jamuns. All of these are destroyed. All of these sufferings are destroyed by sadhana bhakti. May you all very nicely one day read Srimad Bhagavatam. But first, let's learn these basic devotional texts. Okay. Are you ready for the next leaf? There were two leaves. What was the first of those leaves we just discussed? sadhana bhakti sprouts two leaves. What's the first one? Raise your hand. No. Raise your hand. Yes, Mataji.
The first leaf is to get rid of the suffering or the cause of suffering.
Very good. And now the second leaf. I know it was 20 minutes ago. But some of you may be able to remember.
To bring up auspicious quality.
Very good. That's the second leaf. Just from practicing sadhana bhakti nicely. Is there anyone here that wouldn't like to have nice qualities? We would all like to have nice qualities. Do your sadhana bhakti very nicely and good qualities will come. Here's how it works. Krishna appreciates, they're doing their sadhana very nicely. Let me decorate them with this nice quality. Let me give them that nice quality. There's so many nice qualities. Let me give them more and more nice qualities. Krishna is very kind. And he has a big treasury of good qualities. And he wants to give them to you. He's just asking you, please do your sadhana nicely. I'll give you many, many. Try to get those good qualities without Krishna. Even if something comes temporarily, it's only temporary.
But
these wonderful qualities, they're not temporary. They stay with you like the soul. They come when the soul becomes cleansed. So here is a nice little list given by Vishwanath in this nice little book. Disinterest in material affairs. Interest in Krishna. Gratitude. Mercy and compassion. Just do your sadhana nicely. This morning, Maharaj was pleading with us, please go and give the mercy of Krishna consciousness to other people. And that will naturally arise, the desire to do that will naturally arise when you do your sadhana nicely. Forgiveness, intolerance, truthfulness, simplicity, equanimity, fortitude, gravity, and respect for others. These are all very nice qualities. It would be nice if we could have some of these nice qualities. And do your service very nicely, do your sadhana very nicely. And these divine qualities become your decorations. We're almost done with the chapter. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives scriptural support for what he has just said. He quotes a verse from the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. Very famous verse. Yes, yasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinshana sarvayurganas tatra samasurte sara. All the good qualities of the demigods become the decorations of the devotees simply because they've developed devotion for Krishna. Here's another very famous scriptural reference from the Bhagavatam. For one who has prapadyamanasya, one who has surrendered unto Krishna or taken shelter of Krishna, just from that one thing, three other things follow. Devotion to Krishna. Direct experience of Krishna. And detachment from other things. So take shelter of Krishna in sadhana bhakti very carefully. We're almost done. He ends by explaining that these two, Kleshagni and Shubhada, they may appear in different stages, in different degrees, at different rates, at different times for different devotees. Just like when you're growing a little plant. Different little plants, one leaf will come first, another leaf will come second. So similarly, the inauspicious qualities may be reduced. At a different rate, in a different devotee. Okay. So that ends that little section. The two leaves that unfurl. Now we're at the last section. You remember the first slide that I showed you, the nine stages of bhakti? He's now going to very quickly explain those first three stages of the nine. Bhakti begins with faith. What is faith? He gives the following definitions. Trust in scriptures dealing with bhakti. A genuine desire to take up the activities recommended in those teachings. A he says that there are two types of faith. And without the technical terms, one is faith in a spontaneous way, another is faith in a regulative way. Here's Prabhupada's description of the spontaneous way. Supposing someone is the pujari, and they must follow the vidhis, the rules of deity worship. But as they become purified, in their mind, they are thinking of rising very early and greeting the deity and decorating the deity very nicely. They're thinking about Govardhan Puja that's coming up and what a nice festival we'd like to have for the deity of Radha and Krishna. And slowly, slowly, spontaneous feelings for those activities awaken. So he gives these two terms, which one means spontaneous, the other is regulative. This one is especially important for us. Because we're hearing from others who are giving us teachings. So our inspiration is very much our inspiration to carry on regulation nicely comes from those persons who are giving us those teachings. Okay, now we're ready for the next stage. That was pretty quick, right? We just moved on to the next stage. What's the next stage? Following Shraddha is? Sadhu Sangha. So here we are, Sadhu Sangha. The Association of Devotees. Now, faith brings us into that association of Sadhu Sangha. And then gradually one hears and performs the activities that we hear about. There's two kinds of like-minded devotees in the association that we keep. And then there's advanced devotees in that sangha also. Actually, both of these are properly regarded as sadhu. They're attached to satra, that which is eternal, and they help us advance in devotional service. One last little point. We've been speaking, those of you that came for the morning class heard about the Madhyama Adhikari. And those that were in the class yesterday, you also heard about the middle stage of devotion. These two are necessary to become good Madhyamas. As I mentioned yesterday, Prabhupada's teaching brought us very quickly to the Madhyama stage. one more slide with Sadhu Sangha. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes. Through association of saintly people, our mind becomes spiritualized. And the spiritual tendency becomes more condensed or consolidated or stronger. That's very fortunate. Still, we have strong material attachments. In the sadhana stage, unfortunately, that's the case. So we'll get to the next stage when we get there. Next chapter. Now we're going to go to the third of the nine stages, Bhajana Kriya. So Bhajana Kriya is of two types.
Bhajana Kriya 有两类,
steady and unsteady.
有一种是稳定的, Kriya, 一种是不稳定的.
What's going on here? Here we go. This is translation. Let's see. Okay, there we go. Nishtita is steady, and its opposite is unsteady.
那么这里说到了，巴吉纳奎亚有两类，Nishtita是稳定的，还有Anishtita是不稳定的。
This is where we want to go. And this is where we are. And there's a big gap. Here's what we know, and here's where we are. Now, this is a funny part. This is. There's terms, but I'm going to describe like he does, and so there'll be lots of laughter now. This is going to. Okay. So, there are different progressive stages of unsteadiness. And the first stage is called false confidence. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the example of a young student. Sometimes there are new devotees that are like this too. They just come in the door and they think they've already mastered everything. Maharaj and I were laughing about it earlier today. Somehow, utsaha mayi. Utsa means enthusiasm, and mayi means false. Like say a child enters into school and think, oh, I know all my lessons already. False confidence. And then they realize, oh, maybe I don't know everything. They realize, maybe I don't know everything. And then comes the next stage. They may try very hard for some time and then become lazy for some time and try very hard for some time and maybe some of you find that within yourselves. Sometimes. And there's a term for it, Gana Tarala. Tarala. Tarala.
Tarala.
I'll just tell a little story. Bhakti Chaitanya Swami was describing this Utsaha Mayi one time. One time, George Harrison was visiting the Bhaktivedanta Manor. In China, you know who are the Beatles, right? So one of the Beatles was George Harrison, and he was a secret Hare Krishna guy. So he had a country estate, and one of his properties was a country estate, a big house and some land, and very beautiful. And he just gave it to ISKCON. Prabhupada was very happy with him. And he made a nice temple. So one time George Harrison wanted to visit and see how they had transformed it into a temple. So he came up in a big limousine. And he got out of the limousine and was walking towards the Bhaktivedanta Manor. He was walking on the little road to get to the house, the temple. In London, it rains a lot. So there was a big mud puddle. Very enthusiastically, a brahmachari came running up and paid his obeisances before George Harrison right in the big mud puddle. And he stood up and he was dripping with mud. And George Harrison said, "You didn't have to do that." So Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj taught, this is an example of Utsaha Mayi. And then comes that's the next stage, very enthusiastic, and then complacency and back and forth. And there's a long section in this little book where he speaks about indecision. Sometimes as devotees we have to make decisions about things. Sometimes devotees get stuck. And they can't make a decision. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the classic example of a young man deciding, should he remain brahmachari or should he get married? Maybe that's not a big thing that happens yet in China because everyone gets married. But in our temples where it's, you know, should I remain brahmachari or not, it's really funny.
Now
So the mind goes way over here thinking, oh, how valuable it is to be brahmachari, you won't become entangled in household life and all of its complexities. But then I should be realistic, there aren't so many people to maintain brahmachari life nicely. Maybe I would be better suited as a householder. Yes, but if I can maintain brahmachari life, it'll be so beneficial for me. But I know there's some wonderful householders and I see that they can maintain their Krishna consciousness very nicely. But if I can maintain my brahmachari life, I'll have so much time for hearing and chanting and studying Prabhupada's books. But I've seen so many brahmacharis struggle, maybe it's more suited for me, and back and forth, and back and forth. And the way that he expressed it is very funny. So that's 3 of 6. And these are very standard textbook, just you can predict it's going to happen kind of thing. Here's 2 more, they're very similar. One is, I make a determination to give up bad things, but I can't give them up. And then the other side is, I know there's some things that are good for me, but I can't do those things that are good for me. And we all are familiar with that one. We consult with our friends and think about it very carefully, and I know I spend too much time on the internet or whatever it is. I know I shouldn't eat so much. But the prasadam is so good. And especially when I come to the temple, the cook is really good. But then when I eat a big lunch, I can't stay awake for the afternoon class. So I should eat less for lunch. So we make a determination I should eat less. And then comes the lunch. We don't always eat the right amount. And so many examples. Let's say, I know I want to read a verse from Bhagavad Gita every day. And somehow it doesn't happen, reading a verse in Bhagavad Gita every day. Or some kind of example like these. Now, the 6th one just went off the page, but I can tell you what it is. Taranga Rangani is number 6. Ranga means wave.
Rangana的意思是波浪。
Just like the deity in South India named Rangana. Ranganatha is the deity of Lord Vishnu who is lying in the ocean of milk. And in that ocean of milk, there are waves. So he's called Ranganath, the Lord of the Waves. And Rangini, it means diminutive, a small wave. And Taranga Rangini means enjoying the waves. So when one starts to become a little successful in spiritual life, people will come and say, "Oh, Prabhu, you're doing such nice devotional service." And there's a tendency to say, "Yes, I'm doing such nice devotional service." And then you get some special title or some honor or some praise. And there's a tendency in this stage of unsteadiness to be an enjoyer of that title or honor or praise. One may think, what's the harm? It's coming from devotional service. One who wants to be the enjoyer of such fruits of devotional service exhibits a kind of unsteadiness. Okay, we're almost done with this section. Oh, we're done with this section. We're done. Hare Krishna. I have one more slide here that's a preview of the next chapter, but it's not on your presentation. I'll say them anyway, even there isn't a slide. As bhajana kriya or devotional practice becomes stronger, there's a general spiritualization of the sense of self. Instead of false ego, I start to identify self as a servant of Krishna. And the things that I used to think of as mine, become Krishna's. Krishna's computer. Krishna's car. Krishna's house. Krishna's ability. Like that. Spiritualizing sense of I and mine. Meditation upon the Supreme becomes sporadic, occasionally, but most of the time it's on material topics. And at this stage, there's still some strong material attachment. But now, chapter 3, tomorrow, we'll be ready to go into the next stage and go beyond some of those limitations. Okay, so that's chapter 2 of Madhurya Kadambini. Let's do a little review.
We heard
about what bhakti is. We heard about the three stages of bhakti, sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema
bhakti.
We heard about the beginning stages of sadhana bhakti, where the two leaves come. And then we heard about the first three of the nine stages of devotional service. Preliminary faith. Association with saintly persons, sadhus. And devotional practice. And that's chapter 2. So now we have some time for some discussion, questions. Yeah. I'm going to invite you to speak something on this. I'll, if you don't want to, I will. But I'll invite you if you wish to. In my years of experience in devotional service, I would say it depends on the particular person and their situation, and it can be any one of those, all of those, and some additional ones. Let me say this. If someone is in that indecisive space,
there
do not put pressure upon yourself. Nor should you be pressured by others to make a decision when you're not clear. Remain patient. Remain introspective. Continue to do your sadhana very carefully. And wait for things to become clear. When consciousness is clear, then decisions can become clear. And the opposite is also true. When consciousness is not clear, one will remain indecisive. And as soon as you start to move this way, all the reasons why, no, it should be that way, and you move that way, it should be, no, it should move this way, and... That's a feature of the mind. Not a feature of the intelligence or heart. We're too much accustomed to listen to our mind. I have this little expression that many people join the Hare Krishna movement with their mind. And some time passes. And their mind changes. And then they start to feel really uncomfortable. I think that's good. When they get to that stage, I think it's good. To such a person, I commonly say, I think it's time for you to decide whether you want to rejoin the Hare Krishna movement. Or not, because let the decision be on the platform of the intelligence or the heart, not the mind. Circumstances change, it's the nature of the world. The mind changes, it's the nature of the mind. But Krishna consciousness is unchanging. So join the Hare Krishna movement or join Krishna consciousness with your heart, at least with your intelligence. And then the mind can be properly directed according to your intelligence. Oh, similar to this other question. Understand what the criterion for a disciple and the criterion for a spiritual master is before you identify this spiritual master, that spiritual master. You're not even qualified to having an understanding of what a disciple is or a spiritual master is in many cases. And I'll say one. One other thing. For sure, something you can do in that condition. Take shelter of Srila Prabhupada. Because he's the Shiksha Guru for all of us. Study his books carefully. Actively cultivate a relationship with Prabhupada as your Shiksha Guru. That's really positive. And do that for some time. And then when you hear this teacher, that spiritual master, that guru speak, it will resonate much more with you which is the person who you feel most inclined to be inspired by and take shelter of. Hare Krishna. Is Mataji back here? I saw her hand first. bang it around a little bit.
So after getting initiation from the spiritual master and taking shelter of the spiritual master, how to please such a spiritual master? How to serve such a spiritual master? Okay.
Inquire from them. And read Prabhupada's books. Because within Prabhupada's books is the answer to that question. Let me ask you a question. How carefully have you read Prabhupada's books? How much time do you in the course of a week, how much time do you spend reading Prabhupada's books? Average. Be honest. Give an honest answer. Ask her. Give an honest answer. That was one of those unsteadinesses. Enthusiastic and then complacent. But don't be embarrassed. It's standard. It's a stage of unsteadiness. But that you sometimes read 3 to 4 hours a day, that's very nice. I'll say just a couple of things, simple things. There are general instructions for all devotees, and serving the spiritual master means follow those carefully. And we all know what those things are. Take only Krishna Prasadam for an example. Whatever the circumstance, take only Krishna Prasadam. And not only chant Hare Krishna mantra 16 rounds, try to chant very attentively all 16 rounds. Another is study Prabhupada's books regularly. And etc. There are many such general instructions for everyone to serve the spiritual master nicely. Do those general things nicely. Then there may be some specific instruction for some person. Are you a parent, a mother? So, your spiritual master may give some instructions for you in regard to your child or children.
Mm-hmm.
And so listen to those instructions carefully and try to fulfill them. How to carry out your household duties carefully. Or whatever. Some personal instruction that may be especially to help you in your spiritual life. So take that into your heart also. And cultivate it carefully. Those are general and specific kinds of instructions. Okay. Something else. Mataji, you had something. Yeah.
What's the meaning of pure holy name?
What's the meaning of the pure holy name?
Yeah.
Yeah. The meaning is how we chant. Because the holy name is already pure. And the pure holy name means how carefully we're hearing the pure holy name. And chanting the pure holy name means to chant without offense. And you know what are the 10 offenses, right? So, the pure holy name means chanting without those 10 offenses. And that's what we are to cultivate. The cultivation stage is called Namabhas. Or the shadow of the holy name. And the stage of perfection is the pure holy name where there's no offense, Shuddhanam. Someone else. We have about a half an hour.
Especially the first three parts.
first in the what?
The first three.
Avidya.
Yeah, avidya.
Okay.
So, what's the difference? What's the subtle difference between bhakti practice and Buddhism practice? Because we also have
similar.
Yeah. Only the bhakti can get rid of.
Okay. I follow your question. I understand your question. I'm trying to think of a way to present the answer. I'm going to do what I did in Hangzhou.
Okay.
Here is a picture of the spiritual world. Maybe you can look at the cover of Canto 1 Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the vastness of the spiritual sky. In the vastness of the unlimited spiritual sky, there are spiritual planets called Vaikuntha planets. Amongst the spiritual planets, there's the largest one shaped like a lotus. And that's Krishna Loka. Down here somewhere, there's a cloud. In the spiritual sky, there's a cloud of material energy. That's where we are. We're in the cloud of the material energy. Here's the good news. The cloud is in the sky. So right now, we're in the spiritual sky. But we're not detecting it because we're so absorbed in the cloud. I'll give an example. You're getting in an airplane. And they tell you, fasten your seatbelt, we're going to take off. The plane is zoom along the runway and starts to take off, and now it's not on the land anymore, it's in the sky. We're in the sky. You go higher and then you pass through the layer of clouds. And you look out the window and you just see clouds. And higher altitude, and you're above the clouds, looking down at the clouds. In all three positions, you're in the sky. Below the clouds, in the clouds, above the clouds, you're in the sky. Similarly, right now, we're in the spiritual sky. We're just tuned into the material energy instead of the spiritual sky. We're attached to the material energy. There's a similarity between Buddha's teaching and Krishna's teaching. And that attachment causes misery. There's another similarity between Buddha's teachings and Krishna's teachings.
那么在这个 Krishna 的教导当中和这个佛教的教导当中有一个类似的地方，另外的一个类似的地方是。
So now there are ways of getting free from the attachment to trying to enjoy the cloud or matter.
那也就是说，我们要从这种痛苦当中摆脱出来，试图去享受这个云朵的快乐。
Now here's where the similarities start to separate a little bit.
那么这种类似呢，这种相通的这种相同的。
There are practices that help detachment.
那么就是他们的这种修行帮助一个人不执着不依附。
Now let's go, you know what a Venn diagram is? Like circle and a circle, and there's some parts where they overlap.
例如就是两个圆，一个圆，两个圆，他们叠在一起，有一个共同的地方。
So there's some parts that are similar and some parts that are different.
所以呢，那么这两个圆当它们重叠在一起的时候，有相同的部分，有不同的部分。
So I'm going to emphasize two major differences.
然后我现在要强调它们其中的两个非常突出的不同的地方。
One major difference is where does that illusion or affinity for matter come from, and it's.There's two very distinct views between Buddhism and Krishna's teachings. Where does the affinity for matter or illusion come from? Then here's another big distinction.
这就还有另外的一个不同的地方是主要的不一样的地方。
According to Buddha's teaching, when you no longer have affinity for matter, what's the goal? What's the ultimate state?
那么当就是根据佛教的教导，就是当你对这个物质完不是那么执着，不沉迷于物质的时候，那么它的终极的目标是什么？是 Nirvana， 就是涅槃。
And what is Nirvana？
那 Nirvana 涅槃是什么
？It's a state of voidism or nothingness。
那么 Nirvana 这个阶段，它就是虚无，
yeah.
空是吧？是空，虚无
，empty， Nirvana。
Nirvana 就是涅槃的这种境界
Void
是虚无空
And here's Krishna's teaching
那么 Krishna 的教导是这样的
When you no longer have affinity for matter
当你完全不沉迷于物质的时候
In its place comes affinity or attachment for Krishna
那么 但是一个人会发展出对 Krishna 的依恋
And where does that living entity go when that stage of perfection happens?
那么当一个人到达这样的阶段的时候生物体会去到哪里呢
They go to Krishna in Krishna Loka
他们会去到 Krishna 那里会去到 Krishna Loka
So now where's this Nirvana place?
那 Nirvana 这个地方在哪
Listen
涅槃这个境界处在什么样的位置上
Here's the vastness of the spiritual sky
这是一个浩瀚无垠的灵性的天球
And here's the cloud of the material energy
那么在这个地方这个小角落里是这个物质能量的这个云朵
And there's a place that's called the river Viraja that's in between the spiritual realm and the material realm
那么有一条河介于物质世界和灵性世界之间叫 Viraja 这样的一条河
It's neither here nor there
它既不在这边也不在那边
That's where the Buddhists go.
这就是佛教徒去的地方。
But we want to go to Krishna.
但是我们想要去 Krishna 那里。
That's the difference.
这是不一样的。
We both want to know. We both want detachment from enjoying temporary illusory things.
那么这两者他们之间共同的地方就是我们想我们不想去执着于物质的享乐从这种享乐当中脱离出来
that's not happiness that's the source of misery
那么实际上就不是快乐而是就是去根除掉痛苦的原因
for those covered by ignorance it looks like happiness but it's misery
但实际上是那些被愚昧无知覆盖的人他们以为是快乐但实际上是痛苦
we'd like that removed
我们想要这种情况就是去除这种情况
same for Buddhist teaching
同样的这个佛教的教导也是如此
now where do we want to go to
但是我们去哪呢
if it's not this it's what it's Buddhist is Nirvana and ours is Krishna Loka
佛教徒他们的终极他们就是所处的最高的境界是 Nirvana 但是奉献者他们去到 Krishna Loka
there's one major difference of emphasis
这就是二者之间的主要的不同
not just negation of suffering
不仅不是就是终止痛苦
but attachment for the absolute reality the absolute truththe source of everything, Krishna.
而是发展出对这个万事万物的根源，一切的根源，至尊主 Krishna 的依附。
So there's some similarities and there's some differences.
所以呢，他们之间有相同之处，也有不同之处。
I could go on, but I think that gives you a basic idea.
我还可以继续讲，但是我想已经就是给出了一个基本的这个回答。
Let me say one other thing.
我们还再补充一点。
Reincarnation.
就是轮回。
That's an overlap, a similarity.
就是他们之间重叠，就是类似的地方。
Here's a dissimilarity.
那么他们也有不同的地方。
Or a difference.
或者是不同的地方。
In Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita.
在 Krishna 的教导《佛家梵歌》里面这样教导。
What is it?That's going from one lifetime to the next lifetime to the next lifetime.
那么当你就是是什么？一个人一世复一世，一世复一世。
The tiny spiritual particle, spirit soul.
那么是那种非常是渺小的灵性的火花。
Completely different than matter.
它完全跟物质不一样。
It's the first teaching Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita.
这是 Krishna 在佛家梵歌里给出的第一个教导。
There's matter and there's spirit.
那有物质，有灵性。
And we belong to spirit. That's who we are.
我们是灵性的，这就是我们的身份。
We're now covered by matter.
但是我们现在被物质覆盖了。
We identify with the matter.
我们现在认同于物质。
And we've gotten who we are.
而且我们不知道我们到底是谁。
So once the covering is removed.
所以呢，当这种覆盖物被去除掉之后。
We have the beginning of an idea of who we are.
我们就开始，我们就对我们是谁就有了一个初级的认识。
And when that little spiritual particle that's over here in this cloud of material energy understands the relationship with the supreme soul and engages in loving exchange with the supreme soul, that's the stage of our true identity.
那么当我们这个处在物质能量之下的这个渺小的灵魂我们的真正的应该认识到自己的真正的身份应该是去到至尊人格首神一万人之源至尊主 Krishna 那里并且要和他发展出这种奉爱的这种关系在这种关系当中去活动这是我们真正的身份
And we can do that right here.
我们可以在这里就能做到。
We don't have to go there.
我们不用就是去到非要去到那里才能做到。
We can do it right here.
我们可以在这里就能做到。
Through sound.
通过声音。
Starts with sound.
我们从声音音振开始。
And sound awakens our forgetfulness.
那么这种声音呢，就会唤起我们忘记的事情。
Maharaj described it so nicely in his class.
Maharaj, 你的学生 Maharaj 今天早上在这个课堂
So we can be with Krishna now.
Through
the medium of love and loving service.
是通过这种充满爱的活动，通过这样的媒介。
But now we're covered.
但是我们现在被覆盖了。
We have affinity to enjoy matter still.
我们现在对物质非常的执着，非常的执迷。
So we do some practices.
所以呢，我们现在要做一些练习。
We practice like they do up in the spiritual world.
我们要练习的就是像在灵性世界里那么做的一样。
And we use these very senses.
而且我们要用我们的感官
in the service of the master of the senses.
我们要用我们的感官去服务感官的主人。
It's bhakti.
这就是 bhakti.
It's love.
这就是爱。
Very practical.
是非常实际的。
And by so doing, our spiritual identity becomes awakened.
通过这样做，我们灵性的身份就会被唤醒。
Our spiritual form becomes manifest.
我们的灵性的形体就会被展现出来。
Even while I'm doing things with this body,
今天是我用这个躯体在从事活动。
The spiritual form becomes awakened.
那么灵性的形体也会被唤醒。
And when the body drops,
当我们离开这个躯体的时候，
the spiritual form is there.
那灵性的躯体就会展现而出。
Read in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7.
我们在《正典般若波罗蜜多》第一篇第七章读到。
Excuse me, chapter 6. Narada describes exactly what I just described, how it happened to him.
那么是在《佛家四典佛家晚谈》第一篇第六章 ，Narada 刚就是 Narada 在这一篇章节里面说到了我刚才说的那些。
Now let's go to Buddhist teaching. There's reincarnation.
那么我们现在来看一看佛教徒的教导，关于轮回的教导。
Question: What is it that's reincarnating?
那提出一个问题，什么是轮回？
What is it that is incarnated? What is it?
是什么在轮回？
One soul, one body to the next body.
是什么在轮回？从这个躯体进入到下一个躯体。
Buddha doesn't teach about a soul.
但是佛教里面的教导并没有教导灵魂的教导。
He doesn't say there isn't one.
他说到了。
He does not say there is no soul. He doesn't even address there is a soul.
他甚至没有说到有灵魂。
Because the soul is eternal.
因为灵魂是永恒的。
In the state of nirvana, where are the souls?
那么在 nirvana 这种境界当中，灵魂在哪？
It's nothingness.
那里是虚无的一种状态。
According to Buddhism teaching, it said that nirvana is a position. They went to the pure land. They go to the pure land.
Okay, I know about that one.
我对这个西方极乐世界听说过。
And what do you do in the pure land?
那他们在西方极乐世界干什么呢？
Buddha, there's a form of Buddha who teaches you how to go to the place of nothingness.
那么这个Buddha 他有他的这个形体。
Yeah.
他教导说怎么样去到达虚无。
It's such a nice place, pure land of bliss.
他在那里说到了这个西方极乐世界是快乐的地方。
Everything is nice.
一切都非常的美好。
But you have to keep going.
但是呢，你必须要继续
if you're、really、good,
继续进行下去。
If you're really qualified,
你必须要继续走下去。如果你真正的有，你如果你真的很有资格的话
，You'll be trained how to enter into nirvana.
那么，如果你真的很有资格的话，你就会受到训练，怎么样进入到涅槃 nirvana 的境界。
The pure land of bliss is in this cloud down here.
那么在西方极乐世界，它就在这个云坛这儿。
The place where you go from there is beyond the clouds.
那么你要去到的那个地方是在云朵之上，超越于这个云朵之上。
To the place that's neither here nor there. No soul. Now, there are different versions or varieties of Buddhism. Many. Just the main ones, and there's many.
Krishna consciousness can make us very specifically be conscious of Krishna.
You got it. Still Bhajana Kriya,
yes.
But it's steady Bhajana Kriya instead of unsteady Bhajana Kriya. Let me explain something. Similarly, the stages of bhakti are gradual phases that can continue on and on and on. You translate it. For example, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, the nine stages of bhakti can also be described as faith in different features or stages or nine stages. Faith in its most mature stage is called prema. And at other stages it's given another name, but it's just different stages of faith. Similarly, bhajana kriya that's unsteady has different parts, and bhajana kriya that's steady is called nishta, which is one of the nine stages of bhakti, although bhajana kriya is number three over here. We're not used to thinking like that. Analytical minds like to compartmentalize things. And this isn't compartmentalized like a bucket and a bucket and a bucket. Second point. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. The bhakti creeper is very unique. Whatever exists in the early stage still remains in the next stage and the next stage and the next stage. For example, when you have, materially you have a seed, and there's a covering over the seed, and then you want to sprout the seed, and the covering softens and it falls away as the life inside the seed starts to grow. Go ahead, say if they can hear it. The seed stage is gone. Then there's a little sprout. And then the sprout stage is gone because now there's leaves. And over there there's a tulsi plant and little sprout is gone with the leaves and now it's so many leaves. In other words, the previous stage is no longer. That's for something material. But the bhakti creeper is spiritual. Everything from the previous stage is there in the next stage too. But now in a more mature condition. He explains like that. We have 2 minutes before lunch.
What is the free will of individual free will? So what's the difference between free will and lust?
Free will and lunch?
Lust.
Oh, luck. Okay. A little different. Okay. Luck, L-U-C-K, luck, good fortune.
Like?
L-U-S-T,
left.
Life, L-I-F-E? Do you get it? What's the question? The difference between free will and?
Lust.
Lust. Oh, free will and lust. Okay. Lust is, in a broad sense, lust is the influence of the motive passion trying to be an enjoyer of an object of matter. Commonly, lust has its male-female attraction kind of feature. But one can have lust for other types of things. In a broader sense of the term. And free will is choices that we make, basically choices towards matter or choices towards spirit. There's a very, very limited range of free will choices we make once we're in the realm, the field of matter. Free will shrinks. It's something like a cow with a rope around the neck of the cow. And the person taking care of the cow gives the cow a certain amount of rope so they can walk around and eat the grass in that little area. When one is situated in the mode of goodness, we have more rope. One who is situated in the mode of ignorance, the rope is shortened very much. And the mode of passion, which is lust, somewhere in between. By the modes of nature, free will is restricted. The free will of the living entity is restricted by the modes of nature. But if we repose our free will in relation to Krishna instead, and if we direct our free will toward Krishna, that free will capacity expands a whole lot. Let's take Narada Muni for an example. He can travel anywhere in the spiritual and material world without an airplane. He doesn't need a passport or a visa either. He doesn't need to work hard and earn a lot of money to buy his ticket. Because he's properly used his free will. He's free to move wherever he likes. But that freedom is because of his reposing his desire in relation to Krishna. And that means he's moved away from the mode of passion or lust. Does that help?
界这个归西以后，用这个还用这个个体意识的服务主观上。
So after one go back to the spiritual world, to go to spiritual world, he continue use his
will
to serve Krishna.
Oh yeah.
是的，他继续运用他的自由意志去服务 Krishna。当他回到灵性世界之后，继续运用他的自由意志。
So we're going to use our free will now to go take prasadam. Before I came to China, I was in a temple in America. And I asked the temple pujari to give me maha prasadam from the deity.So that I could distribute Radha Madhava Hari Mahaprasad to all of you. So I'm going to move around and give out some Mahaprasadam. It's little small pieces, but it's very powerful.